Mickey Hart here. You're listening to the GAA Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Alright, you're very welcome along to the GAA Hour brought to you by AIB. Brilliant show lined up for you today. We've got John Horan, Leinster Council Chairman, going to talk to us about the dominance of Dublin at Leinster football level and also now Leinster club football level. So we'll see what his idea is about, you know, maybe making things a little bit fairer, certainly at club level. We have Johnny Doyle, who's now obviously former Kildare brilliant footballer, but he's now Leinster senior football selector. We're going to get his thoughts on how the whole experience was. I can't imagine it was great. With me today is Conan and Mikey, and we have Dion Fanning here as well today. Dion, how's it going? And lads.
No, that's fine.
Put Dion first.
I think we can call you our special guest, Dion.
Yeah. Very nice to be among you lads.
I mean, I've been gone for 2 weeks, but no, Dion's here. Go ahead.
Yeah, welcome. Good holiday.
Welcome back, actually.
Thanks very
Conan.
Much.
Yeah, it's great to hear your voice again. And you missed all the Dermot. You missed Dermot Connolly, actually.
Yeah, but it was great. I think it was better just to sort of stay as a fan. Rather than having to talk to him or be.
What did you think of the interview? Did
I
you think it came
brilliant.
Across well? Do you
I
love him more
you
or less?
I've played so many times. I've listened to it on repeat a few times.
Do you love him more or less after the interview?
Are we getting t-shirts made up of the stuff that he said to you?
Best interviewee in Ireland.
It was probably the best one I've heard this year.
Yeah, it was as good as one of his outside of the right passes. Right, lads, want to talk about news talk first here because it was a big news last Friday and we spoke a lot here about GAA rights, about Sky. We've, you know, done a lot with Paul Rouse, Dick Clerk and different people who have different opinions on the media rights. First of all, we have to say what a huge disappointment it is from a fan's point of view and from everybody's point of view, really, that News Talk, with the coverage that they gave, I was a big part of it for 6 years, far and away exceeded what RTE bring to the table, as far as I'm concerned. It was new, it was fresh, pundits were good. So the first things first is how disappointing this is that they're no longer have the GAA rights.
Yeah, it's a big loss, and you could see that, you know, reflected when the news was announced. People were kind of stunned by it and felt that this shouldn't have happened, and I think it does put a challenge up to RTE now about how they're going to cover these games, because they've got a lot of responsibility, because News Talk, as you say, have done such a good job of it, and it is it should be something that they're pushed on, because there is this danger with things with RTE that they do things in a way that comes from having a license fee, comes from having a kind of a slightly privileged position in the sort of media landscape, and that shouldn't be allowed happen in this case.
One of the very many sticks that has been used to beat Sky Sports has been the fact that their coverage has been so beige, it's been so bleh, you know, what have you done that TV3 didn't do? In fairness to News Talk, they brought in sideline reporters, like
a very good one.
Oh, face for radio.
Best in the business.
They doubled up on their co-commentators, you know, they went quite hard at their post-match interviews, and you know, they freshen things up a bit. Not to say RTE's coverage is poor, but it's different, and I don't know how it can be improved by having to do twice as much every weekend.
Yeah. To be honest, all this news, like, it came as a big shock to everybody. It didn't come as a huge shock to me, because from conversations I would have had in News Talk, I know in the early this year. In the third year of News Talk's contract, there was some renegotiations between News Talk and the GAA, and there was a standoff. It was kind of relayed to me that News Talk could potentially lose their GAA rights in the third year of their contract. So I knew that there was some renegotiations, and I knew that there was some potential tension going on there. So when it went up for renew, News Talk not getting them wasn't a huge shock to me, but it was a huge shock to the wider GAA public. And a lot of people immediately jumped to blame the GAA. Why on earth would you not give News Talk the rights? Well, I just know from personal experience is that the GAA loved News Talk, loved their product, because it was far and away better than RTE. That's my opinion, not the GAA's. you know, and it was fresh and it was innovative, and it doesn't. Now we're back to a situation where RTE have a monopoly on the radio rights. So why on earth would a GAA not want or want that to happen? It doesn't make any sense to me outside of there's something that led to this.
Well, and this comes back to the point that Newstalk made in their statement about RTE having this advantage with the licence fee. We're all in a kind of more and more kind of compressed media world where, you know, RTE use the licence fee not just for television, not just for radio now, but for also online stuff where everything goes. And like, was that the intention of the licence fee when it was first introduced? It wasn't. It was to do with broadcasting. So like, there are different factors involved.
Yeah.
And it is tough, like when you're competing against somebody who's going to do that. Equally, nearly half of RTE's revenue comes from commercial sources. As you know, so they are in competition with Newstalk in that regard.
Yeah,
so
Newstalk have a very good point on that.
But at the same time, RTE, like, if for example Newstalk were to bid for all the GAA rights and get everything off RTE, should RTE back down and not use the licence fee to bid for GAA rights at all? Because like, people would argue that one of the key things that should be on RTE as a national broadcaster would be GAA.
Yeah.
You couldn't say, oh, because this is going to be free to, this is going to be on a free station that isn't using licence fee money, if Newstalk wanted to buy the whole lot, which is not what they were trying to do, but if they wanted to buy the whole, should RTE back off and let a commercial rival have it? Also, you could argue the licence fee, you know, the GAA is what people pay the licence fee for in some ways. Like, it's a big part of Irish culture, and if RTE somehow ended up losing any GAA rights and said, oh, well, we didn't feel that we should use a licence fee when it was available for free somewhere else, there'd be uproar too.
Yeah, yeah, no,
it'd be
it
a
is.
Much bigger story if this was reversed. We should say that statement from Newstalk last week did answer a lot of questions. We did invite the man to the show to discuss this further, but they've, you know, they came back to us and said that the statement they put out last week is as much as they're going to say regarding, you know, confidential negotiations.
Yeah, I think because it was worded in a way, the Newstalk statement, we believe we made a very competitive pitch. Now that's pitch, and I'm sure the pitch was very competitive. It doesn't mention actually what the offer was, because I remember from conversations I had in there, I was left in under the understanding that there was a renegotiation of what the terms of the initial contract were. Now, I would have been absolutely fuming at that stage, because I would have thought after 6 years unbelievable coverage that Newstalk would have actually come in strong and look, because Newstalk only have second choice games for GAA and they have to leave at the after the quarterfinal stage. So it's not a great deal, you know, and I would have thought Newstalk, because their coverage was so great, might have gone strong and looked for more instead of saying okay and trying to renegotiate with the GAA. So that's an issue. That's an issue, a huge issue I would have had, you know, with Newstalk at the time. But it's a difficult one, because we don't know what was offered, we don't know the negotiations, but all we know is that a really, really good product has gone off the airwaves now, and you know, it's just
it is good for, and like Woolly knows that, you know this better than anybody, like the demographic, the people who listen to Newstalk coverage are younger generation. You would think the GAA, that's why, probably partly why the GAA love their coverage.
Yeah.
But again, it is, and the question ultimately then does come down to how it's going to affect, you know, people who are listening to games. What RTE are going to do with, you know, twice as many games, or how many more games they've got to cover? Where they're going to, you know, how it's going to just work on a kind of practical level.
Yeah, but it's they're not glamour games, lads. Like, I mean, the last game I ever did with Newstalk was Clare versus Limerick down in the Gaelic grounds at the start of this year. Like, it's not, you know, they're not. It wasn't a good deal to begin with.
I saw them when I began my GAA odyssey last June in Longford.
It's an odyssey now, isn't it?
It was an odyssey day. Yeah, it was December. Looking back on it fondly, you know, didn't seem like an odyssey when I was pulling up in Longford. Everton on Saturday afternoon. But, you know, that's the game. The News Talk were covering that game that day.
See, they get second choice.
I got second choice. They got second choice.
I think you were fourth choice that day. That was a day of qualifiers. But it is pointed out that News Talk never got the choice of the best game that weekend. RTÉ always picked the best game, and News Talk were left with whatever RTÉ didn't want. So, like, you could get lucky some days and get an Ulster final, because a Munster hurling final would be on, and RTÉ love Munster hurling, so you get a really glamour game. But it wasn't the greatest deal in the world, and when your product is that strong, my idea would have been, and that's where my frustration come from, go hard and get better quality games and make the product even better, not, you know, go the other way and ultimately lose your rights. Just before we finish on this, I got a lot of criticism on Twitter because I pointed out a couple of these things when it happened.
You got criticism on Twitter?
Well, it's very unusual, but
you pointed out something on Twitter.
Yeah, but like this is the thing. News Talk are my former employers. Now I work for Sports Joe as a rival. It's like you're scoring like against a former team and not being allowed to celebrate.
You're like Shane Duffy last night.
There you go, like Shane Duffy. I'm with someone else now. That's my commitment. I can celebrate a goal anytime I bloody want, and that's the way it works.
For the point of view of digital publishers, the fact that the GAA have retained their own clips rights is quite interesting. They were sold previously to newspapers and newspaper websites, and now they've retained those. They're going to feed them out with via Air, who are a football championship sponsor, but they're retaining them. So it's be interesting to see now whether they go down the route that has been taken by Air with Europa League football and with other broadcasters like Sky Sports to try to do the Premier League. Will we get live in-game clips, which would be great for people? You know, yeah, you're out and about on your phone. Oh, there's Dear McConnelly's played a pass off the outside of his right foot. No matter where Conan is, he'll be able to see that Dear McConnelly pass on his phone. So that's one very interesting development in terms of the rights, which didn't get mentioned much.
Definitely, and it would be great to get them. Dave McIntyre, Oisín Langan, Joe Malloy, all those fellas that worked hard on a Sunday and now are left with an empty few hours. That's who I kind of feel bad for in all this. Right, Clare, our county secretary reports, we mentioned last week, Mikey, and we knew we'd be back because we said these are biased. These are playing to the local county convention. No one should pay any attention to them. And then during the week, we get Pat Fitzgerald's county secretary report. And
doesn't he have the same surname as the former Clare hurling manager?
Yes, and would you believe it was not his son's fault. It was everybody else's fault why Davey no longer works as Clare manager. It's the player's fault. Who else's fault is it? Conan?
Keyboard warriors.
Are like, if you think that your voice is not being heard, I mean, me and you, Willie, were just complaining earlier about Villa and Everton respectively and how we just take to Twitter to lambast the clubs and the managers and ask for change and stuff, and you know, here's the Clare secretary saying people turn to social media to have a shot at the management. And so these gripes are being heard. So the cohort of people who never really endorsed his appointment in the first place pushed the keyboards to stir up opposition. So they can see your gripes. If you have any gripes, get in contact on Twitter because they're reading them all. But yeah, it was blame the players. They have to ship the blame for horrendous defensive blunders. And it kept saying the word cohort. Cohort of players need to analyse their own performance and commitment.
Yeah, so it's not Davey's fault. It's not Davey's fault that Clare underperformed for 4 years in a row despite bringing in Dunlop Cusack this year, and you could argue they had a relatively all right this year, they won the league, but then massively underperformed in the championship for 4 years. None of that is Davey's fault. It's not my son's fault. This is my secretary's report. It's other people. And that's it. So county secretary reports.
Warriors, cohorts. It sounds like an episode of Game of Thrones in there.
It is. We don't know what's going on there, but maybe this is what's stressing Davey out all the time, is all these cohorts of people that are conspiring against him. Quickly, before we move on, because we have John Horan, Leinster Council Chairman, coming up in a minute, but we have to give a shout out to St. Vincent's, who won the Leinster Club. They've won 3 out of 4 Leinster Clubs. They've now equaled Portlaoise's record of 7 Leinster Clubs. And they obviously have 3 All-Irelands. So they're the best club in Leinster now. They're a juggernaut. They're a brilliant, brilliant club. Brilliant performance again at the weekend. Well, not a brilliant performance. Didn't have to be brilliant against the road team who just weren't at their level. But they play a brilliant football. They play counter-attacking football. Dear McConnelly's obviously brilliant, Mossy Quinn, Varley, like they'll take Stopping to win the All-Ireland now. So like, I mean, a huge shout out to them. We tried to get a couple of them on the show, but they're obviously celebrating pretty heavy. And you think on a Wednesday you're safe enough getting lads on the show after a win.
It's been a long year. I have to say a shout out to the goalkeeper, St Vincent's goalkeeper. Not the most difficult penalty save of all time, but easily the most nonchalant. The way he saved it, the ball bounced and he caught it as he was getting off the ground. It was wonderful. It was one of the best penalty saves I've seen.
It was actually turned the penalty into an attack.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
Would you say that Vincent's need to be split in two now at this stage? Is that what we're getting to?
I'm glad you said something like that actually, because I've been positive about them obviously because they're a brilliant, brilliant club. And I believe Ger Brennan's comments afterwards that St Vincent's don't come out or don't go seeking transfers. And I believe that they don't. But that's not to say that they don't have a lot of help, that are not from St Vincent's, and they have a lot of help. And I couldn't help but watch. I was watching the game at the weekend, like, and I have no allegiance to either team because I'd spent some time in Road, and it's such a small little village, and they're missing two lads from the army, and I didn't realise Road was as small as it was. And you have them coming up against St Vincent's, who are a juggernaut of Dublin football, and it just looked to me like this is not really fair. Mm. Like, it's not fair. Vincent's would beat Road with just Vincent's lads, but they've ended Varley in the team. You know, Bratnock came on for Ger Brennan when he went off. They have from Sligo, Brendan Egan from Sligo. They'd have Eamon Fennell if he was fit. They have like four, maybe three or four extra lads on top of an already brilliant team. And I watched it and I went, it's not fair. It's not fair on Road.
I don't know. Is it any less fair than Dublin versus Offaly? It's just the way Irish population has fallen, that, you know.
No, but I'm not talking
such
about
a large portion of it is inside the M50.
100%. And sure, you can't argue with population. Like, that's the same in any big town that has more of a population. But you can argue with the population added to by extra help and inter-county help.
But they're new, like, residents of a place. They're the same as CJ Stander can
not
play for Ireland.
CJ Stander can play for Ireland after 3 years. You can play with Dublin in a Leinster Club Championship after Varley is with them first year. Varley could be gone next year. Yeah. There is nothing to stop Varley from leaving Vincent's with an All-Ireland Club medal after beating Road in a Leinster final. And he hasn't committed to St Vincent. So, like, I mean, that is not fair in my eyes, that someone could come in, get a quick medal and get out of there. And you've got the Rhodes, who are all from Road, a tiny village, the Portlaoises, and I've spoken about this lots of times, that it's not an easy fix, but it cannot be fair watching that.
It's definitely not fair when you come out of Dublin. I mean, it's probably not fair to say that these players who have legitimately moved to Dublin can't play for a club team, which is fine. There's loads of Dublin clubs, so they can all play against each other. But then once you come out of Dublin and you're playing Road, you're playing Slochneil. Like, you know, I've instance, come up against Slochneil, and it's just a little team at the bottom of a mountain with what do we say, a post office, no shops. I mean, and that's all Slochneil people. Then it becomes relative then, where it's like these people have recruited so many different men from different counties. Population isn't really a thing. It is just they've got these accomplished players coming to play for a good team.
You don't mind population. That's, you can never get away from population. It's this fact of the extra help. And I'm going to ask John Horan about this, because my idea is that after the Dublin Club Championship, that either stop it, put a cap on the amount that can go through into the Leinster club, or else you have to be at the club 3 years before you can move on. Like CJ Stander, show some level of commitment to the club and not have a situation where you can just land in inter-county, help a club, and I'm back down to my own club and have me All-Ireland club medal in my pocket. That's not right, and that's not transferring. It might be transferring for the right reasons. You might be working in Dublin for a year, but it's too short a time to help them win an All-Ireland club and then get out, you know. So John Horan is coming up next. I'm actually going to put these points right to him.
You ready? Let's go.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last night.
The camera show, it didn't look great. Yeah, there was maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible, and lucky to lose, like. Let's go! 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure.
AIB, back in club and county.
All right, delighted to say John Horan, chairman of the Leinster Council, is with me now on the line. John, how's it going?
Not too bad, no, Colin.
John, I wanted to talk to you about, you know, on the back of the St. Vincent's Road game at the weekend, and it was obviously a pretty routine win for Vincent's in the end. Like, looking through the list of honours in the Leinster Club Championship, and Dublin have won the last 5 in a row. They've won 10 of the last 14. And looking at the game at the weekend, Vincent's obviously have transfers playing for them that are not from St. Vincent's. Everybody on the road team were all from the parish of Road, and I'm just wondering, like, it's a very difficult thing to fix in a Dublin context because most clubs have the ability to, you know, attract transfers of people who come up to Dublin to work. And I'm just wondering, when the competition moves into Leinster, maybe there's a fairer way of giving clubs that don't have the benefit of these transfers a better chance.
Well, in fairness, Colin, the transfer rules allow players to join Dublin, and there's no category within membership within the GAA. You're either a member of a club and you play for them, or you can't. You know what I mean? And I know people are highlighting Vincent's at the moment and the number of non-native Vincent's players that they had on their panel last Sunday. But in actual fact, if you look at it, like, Enda Varley was the only player that started. And if you go through the list and the name is there, none of them were what you would say marquee top star inter-county players. So, like, urban areas, be it Galway, Cork or that, are always, due to the migration of people for work purposes, always going to have those players arriving in their area and the opportunity to play for them. And I know there's always the argument that players should go home and play for their local team, but I can tell you, as one that leaves Dublin on a regular basis to go to meetings in Portlaoise, I've often taken 2.5 hours to get down as far as Portlaoise. So that whole movement back home to train with your club, there is that whole traffic difficulty to get out of the centre of Dublin. So, you know, you can understand players when they come and they're living and they're settling into a community in Dublin wanting to actually join the local team. So this is where it's coming from. And I know people are highlighting Vincent's, but if you go back, Ballyboden won the All-Ireland last year. They'd only one non-native Ballyboden man on the team, and that was Paul Durkin. Go back previous to that, Ballymunkickens were the last team to get to an All-Ireland final from Dublin previous to Vincent's being a club that got there. And again, Ballymun are working off homegrown players. So,
No, they're not, John. They're not. Ballymun aren't now. Ballymun would have a good few internal Dublin transfers, and they'd have James Burke from Mayo, and they had Gibney from Cavan there for a year, but he left again. So, you know, I think most...
left again, but the dominance of the Ballymun team is they are local.
Yeah, they have a great core of young players come up through the ranks, you know, but they have Kevin Leahy from, I think he's from, I'm not sure, some other club internally.
I think he was Clontarf originally.
Yeah, Clontarf. Yeah, no, they have a few of them. But do you see my point, John, as in how difficult it is for Road to come up? Now, I would argue that Brendan Egan from Sligo is a top inter-county player. Now, he's been with Vincent's a while, but at the same time, you know, Eamon Fennell would be there if he had been fit. You know, you have Enda Varley, you have Bratnock coming on for Ger Brennan. Just in the interest of fairness, do you think it's fair that Road should have to play against Vincent's, who are already a super club with a brilliant tradition, that have got the benefit of, you know, these extra players?
Look, I have huge sympathy for Road, and I understand their frustration. It, like, you know, you can put it on a par. Look at Neil McCormick running in the European cross country last Sunday, and, you know, all the Kenyans can come in and run for Turkey.
Yeah.
Unless people change the rules, there's nothing you can do about it. Like, Fionnuala Britton got fifth. She should have been third, only for two Kenyans running under the guise of, you know, Turkey. And as a nation, we feel sorry about that. I understand. I can empathise with where Rose are coming from. There is an irony in all this, though. Vincent's were probably the last Dublin club that ever accepted an outsider into the club from a transfer point of view. They held tight on that for years. I think Kieran Barr from Antrim coming in as a hurler was the first outsider they accepted, and now it looks like it's gone the other way. Like, I know of another very prominent club in Dublin last year, and they just turned down inter-county transfers because it was their view and policy that they had a lot of success from minors and 21s coming through, and they felt they didn't need these outsiders to join. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when you come to Dublin, and you know it, when you come to Dublin, you work in Dublin, and you come integrated in life in Dublin, it's very hard then to say you're going to keep travelling home to play your club football. So if you're into football, you're going to look to join a club in Dublin. And unfortunately, the players that are coming to Dublin, like, there's no rule when you arrive in Dublin, or there's no draft, that you have to go to a particular club. So the players coming up from the country are choosing to join the stronger clubs.
Yeah.
And hence, as you make the point, you're actually making the stronger clubs stronger.
So
but it's the choice of the players coming from the country that's making that choice. It's, I don't think there's a very proactive poaching process going on or anything like that.
No, no, and I 100% wouldn't accuse St. Vincent's of poaching. They're not that type of club, and I believe Ger Brennan when he said after the game that they don't be actively... You know, Vincent's get the transfers because, you know, they're prestigious and they're maybe players transferring have a chance of winning something. But, like, and I don't blame players, Sir John. I transferred myself because, like you said, from Dublin in rush hour traffic down to Port Leash is a lot longer than people think. And, you know, whatever people say about transfers, I never blame the club for accepting them, and I don't blame the player for doing it once it's for the right reasons. But having said all that, you cannot take away from the fact that clubs like Road, clubs like Portlaoise are having to come into the Leinster Club Championship and playing these teams that have that extra help. And, you know, whatever about maybe allowing them do it in Dublin was my idea, because it seems to be a level playing field there, that most clubs have this opportunity of the benefit, because, you know, so many people from the country have to move and for genuine reasons don't want to drive home for their clubs. But surely when they come out of Dublin, maybe for the, in the interest of fairness in the Leinster Club Championship, that maybe, you know, there's a limit put on the amount of outside players that might be allowed play in the Leinster Club Championship.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't totally disagree with you by exercising some sort of a limit, and then that would probably limit the number of people. Like, as I said to you earlier, I know a fairly common senior club in Dublin didn't take any transfers in this year. So maybe if there was a rule to say that you're limited to, you know, 3-4 players on your panel that didn't play underage for your club,
yeah,
absolutely fine, because then you wouldn't have 7 fellas joining Vincent. You might have just 3 or 4, and they'd go off and join another club and, you know, maybe strengthen up that club. I just don't think you can have 2 categories of membership that you know what I mean? So I wouldn't say that you can play in Dublin and you can't play in Leinster, but I wouldn't totally disagree with your idea of you can only have so many outsiders playing in your actual team from the start of the competition. So you declare, right, we have 4 non-juvenile members playing on our senior panel into Dublin Senior Championship this year, and you stick those 4 going through. That happens at inter-county level. The likes of Kerry get an exemption that they can have 2 or 3, and I think some of the Christy Ring teams can have up to 5 non-natives on their team to strengthen them. I know,
yeah,
Kerry last year had 1 or 2 lads from Limerick playing for them, just to make them more competitive.
Yeah, but that's the gas thing, John. That, and that's for the right reasons, but we're having the super clubs in Dublin that don't need that help getting the extra help, so it's completely an unfair process. And whatever about the Dublin thing, that's, you know, I'm 100% going to try and get someone from the Dublin County Board on, because it's not regulated and there's no even proof of address when you look for an inter-county transfer. So you can once you're transferring to Dublin, you can almost go to any club that you want, you know, which you don't even have to prove you've moved into the area.
Once you come to Dublin, you can go to any club you want, but you do have to have some proof of address. You do have to have proof of that.
Now, yeah, again, I didn't need
and are very difficult to deal with, I have to say.
I didn't need proof of address now when I just had to put my address down in the transfer form. I didn't need to actually prove where, you know, like a utility bill or something like that, that might actually prove that's where I live. You know, I just had to say where I live.
Yeah, well, I've had to deal with those situations from a Leinster County point of view. And again, you see, if you put in a transfer application and your own club don't object and nobody objects, well, then the transfer goes through. Do you know what I mean? It's only questioned if someone objects, where particularly when you were leaving Portlaoise, if someone said, but sure, we know he's not living in Dublin, he's still down home here,
yeah,
they would object. So it's only when objections come in to transfers that it's actually scrutinised on things like utility bills. But even in that, like, I mean, let's be honest, names on utility bills, short of sitting outside a fella's house and checking that he leaves them on a regular basis, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, a utility bill's difficult enough to...
It's not that difficult. I mean, you can contact the utility supplier and ask them to change the name of the bill. Sure, once the bill is being paid, they're not going to dispute it. Like, you know, there are means if people want to go about it. But, like, your idea of limiting the number of players that can be registered to play with a team possibly is a plus. But like, I think it's been highlighted on Vincent's, like Ballyboden, as I said to you earlier last year, literally had just Paul Durkin and the rest of the 15 that were all natives of Ballyboden, like, you know what I mean?
The thing about that though, Durkin made a save in the last minute of that, in the last 10 minutes of that game, that won the game for Ballyboden. You know, I know you can look at it as only one, but in my opinion, one is too many when Portlaoise don't have any. Like, Durkin is arguably the second best goalkeeper in the country, and he made an unbelievable save from Brian McCormack, which won the game for Ballyboden. Portlaoise didn't have that extra brilliant intercounty player to boost them up. So I think one is too many. But I don't, you don't agree that there's something the Leinster Council can do to make the Leinster Club Championship that little bit fairer for, you know, for teams that have all homegrown players.
The whole thing about these competitions are that once you start in the senior county championship in any county, right, that runs the whole way through to the All-Ireland.
Okay.
So it, all those competitions are actually linked together, because like, it's not that you could play with a Dublin club in Dublin and play with a Laois club in Leinster. Once you start off on the road of that competition, you're actually tied to that club the whole way until that club goes out of that competition.
Okay, so there's nothing you can do.
They're not separate entities. There is a linkage between them in terms of eligibility. So Leinster really don't have it in their hands. I mean, if you wanted to make a change in the structure, you'd have to have it starting at the very beginning back in Dublin. So what you'd have to do is you'd have to get Dublin to tie it down and say, well, you can have four people that didn't play up to minor in your club playing with you in the competition. That's the only thing, and that's something Dublin would have to do, because I can't see how, you know, Leinster or at national level that could be imposed in the Dublin competition kind of thing, you know.
Okay, right, because I thought maybe that there was something you could do as a cut-off point at the start of the Leinster club, but that's obviously not possible then.
No. Once you start, it's like everything. It's that same at intermediate level and junior level. That once you start, once you play in a county championship, that identifies your kind of status and your club for the whole completion of that competition right up until Paddy's Day.
Okay, right. Just on another topic, well, it's on a similar theme. Obviously, Dublin are dominating the Leinster Club Championship. Everybody knows they're dominating the Leinster Football Championship. They've won 11 of the last 12 of them. How concerned are you about the Leinster Championship, John, as Leinster Council Chairman? You know, the attendances are down. Dublin, it's a procession. You know, are you concerned about that?
Very, yeah, no. Like, Dublin's dominance, I mean, is, as you said, dropping attendances. It makes the whole competition less attractive to sponsors. It makes it less attractive to people going to it. I mean, you know, you look at the odds, and I'm not into the betting game, but if you look at the odds from Dublin matches in the Leinster Championship, sure, look, they're at crazy levels of 50-1 on and 100-1 on in some of the matches they're actually playing in. And, you know, this is why, as a project within Leinster, we have got $500,000 for the next 3 years to put into the hinterland of Dublin, Louth, Meath, Kildare and Wicklow. And that this is the start of a project to try and up the actual coaching structure within those four counties to try and help close the gap. Also in that area, Liam O'Neill has come on board and we've created cross-border competitions, which are kicking off in January and February, which the interest is huge. There's over 200 teams going to partake in this competition. And the concept and the idea behind that is that teams would get matches at their own competitive level. What we find is that in some of these counties, you might have four very top Division One teams and they're playing each other and they're tired playing each other. So we're creating this cross-border structure to try and give them more competitive games. I know a lot of people highlight, you know, the coaching benefits that Dublin have, and I will always put the rider in that clubs contribute half of that funding. But it's the big strength in my mind in Dublin is the actual games programme. If you're an under 14 young lad in Dublin, you will get 14 games in your league. There'll be 8 teams in your league of a standard close to what your team sits at. You get 14 games in that plus your championship matches, and if you're a hurler, you get similar level of competition. And I think, you know, and everybody that's involved in sport knows, it's games that actually bring you on and improve you as a player, and that's where the tide is rising in Dublin, and they have that capacity, and that's why we're running these cross-border competitions on the hinterland of Dublin. And as I say, I got Liam O'Neill to head it up to try and create that competition to bring those teams on. Like, and that's us at a level trying to improve it. Short term, is there a huge solution? I don't know. I know all those people said take Dublin out of Croke Park. I don't think it's going to make a massive difference whether they play in Croke Park or not. The gap is just so great at the moment. But look, we've put something in place and we hope that that will grow and try and close the gap.
Yeah, there's a lot of people.
And that's really where the difficulty is.
Yeah, there's a lot of people would argue that this dominance is because the Leinster Council have taken their eye off the ball, and this is a little bit too little too late with the other counties, that so much money has been pumped into coaching in Dublin to make them to better. The eye has been taken off the ball with the other counties, and now we're in the situation that we're in.
I'm not going to answer for previous chairman of the Leinster Council, but look, as a Dub, I've tried to do my best to strengthen it up, and I'm probably acutely aware of the fact that that gap is there. You know, John Costello alluded to it in his report, like, you know, Dublin are strong and they have that capacity and that funding. But you go back 10 years ago, Dublin probably, you know, were struggling to, you know, make a mark in Dublin in terms of the GA in the population of Dublin. But that has turned around now. We just have to concentrate on, you know, strengthening the others. It's not something we're going to solve overnight, but at least I think this East Leinster project, the cross-border games, the extra funding, I think all of that is going to help us.
Right, okay. Just the last thing on this. I know Dublin get a disproportionate amount of money for games development. I think it was 1.46 million last year. And on top of that, the Leinster Council gave them 241,000 for Dublin coaching project. On top of that, Dublin have AIG money. They have about 14 other sponsors. Just why would the Leinster Council have given Dublin that 241,000 on top of the disproportionate money that they already receive?
Well, just to let you know, this East Leinster project is costing 500,000, and I brought that proposal to management in Croke Park and got it approved. And part of the funding,
I'd give you credit for that. But the 241,000, let me finish out. All right.
Part of that 500,000 is being funded by taking 200,000 out of Dublin's coaching budget each year for the next 3 years. So Dublin are surrendering 200,000 to that 500,000, and there's been no big squabble, no big row about or anything like that. And that to me is progress in terms of trying to redress the balance. And I think Croke Park are open, as Leinster are open. If other counties come with meaningful proposals that stand up in terms of the coaching, they will actually be given that support. And like, it's not, and I'm talking about what's going on in four counties around Dublin. But Leinster Council has invested a lot of money in restructuring the coaching in Wexford and in Carlow in recent times. We're working with Laois at the moment, and we've worked in other counties within the province to actually help the restructuring. So we're conscious of it. And look, equalisation has to be a theme going forward in the GAA. I know well Dublin has the funding there, and there has to be equalisation. And equalisation, I feel, a start of it is that 200,000 being taken from Dublin, put in to support that 500,000 a year initiative within Leinster. And hopefully that will help, and hopefully further funding coming from, you know, the GAA's revenue streams will actually be spread around to give greater equalisation. Like, I've been down in counties within Leinster, Offaly, 2 years ago, struggling very badly, starting to turn it around now. We'll have their training centre, hopefully debt-free. I did a seminar down in Sligo with all the Sligo clubs, and similar issues came up down there of the difficulties for them in terms of raising sponsorship and other issues like that. And the GAA centrally has to be conscious of that, and I think funding has to be distributed in a more equitable manner to support those that just don't have the capacity to generate it. Otherwise, what will happen is the whole interest in the GAA and will just collapse, and that in its own self then would cut off revenue streams and everything like that. So we have to be more conscious from a marketing point of view,
yeah,
as to trying to keep those, what would you would say, smaller counties strong, that they can actually compete. Because I don't think anyone's going to change the provincial structure in the morning, and nobody's going to change the county structure in the morning. So these are historical things that we've inherited as an organisation.
Yeah, no, that's true. So you're accepting that the 241,000 given to Dublin by the Leinster Council probably should have been given somewhere else?
Yeah, but that's a historical payment that's been going into Dublin, yeah. And look, as I said, we've taken 200,000 starting from this year's accounting year. 200,000 of Dublin's funding last year is being put into that East Leinster project of 500,000.
Okay, a fair play. And just as a matter of interest on that, are the other counties in Leinster coming to the Leinster Council? Because I do believe you when you say if they come with good, solid ideas and coaching plans that they will get the money. Are they coming with good, strong ideas, John?
Well, they are. No, they are. Like, we're very active on the ground with the whole coaching department within the province. It's just going to take time for some of this to come through. And even if you're doing it very well, no matter what you say, unfortunately, capacity is a problem. Like, you know, if you look at Longford, just take Longford as an example. Longford are extremely competitive in Leinster at minor football level, and they're extremely competitive at under 21 level. And yet, Longford, when you get them up at senior, it just, between fellas leaving the county and the depth of numbers, just catches them out there. Like, I hear of, you know, clubs having an underage section where they might have, say, 70 kids in their whole underage section. My young lad is in the nursery group in the Fianna. There's 70 kids in his own age group. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, there's nobody can change that. That's just reality. We live in an area, there's 70 kids turning up on a Saturday morning for the under 7 nursery training. What do? Do you tell them to go out and play soccer or rugby because we want to, you know, dumb down Dublin? You can't do that. These are just facts of, you know, the geography, the history of the structure of this country as it is. Like, one of the biggest problems in this country is just pure, and I'm not getting into politics now, is not allowing people build houses in rural areas. The restriction on it is killing parishes and local communities, and I just don't understand it. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. Well, Dublin have obviously, Dublin have the natural advantage of population, but now Dublin have the ability to have good coaches and good structures in place because they have the financial resources to do that. You know, so I think it's a combination of the both that has created the, you know, the kind of unfair Leinster Championship is in Dublin because of their natural advantages and because of the brilliant structures now are almost at a stage where they're unbeatable, you know. So I think that's where the issue probably is. Come here, John, before I let you go, Wexford or Carlow, the winners play Dublin either in Wexford Park or in Amore Park. Have you learned from the mistake of Nolan Park last summer?
No, you will not let me concede Nolan Park was a mistake. I'll take you back on that one. 3 years ago, when I was coming in as chairman of Leinster Council, it was discussed, could we bring Dublin down to Port Leash? Two people at the meeting, the two Leash delegates, were in favour of it, right? The next year rolls on. This year, 2016, we brought them to Nolan Park. I'd always said the word cautious was used, and we had to be careful about how we did it. We didn't want anything to go wrong. We went to Nolan Park, we saw the numbers. The numbers didn't hit what we thought they might. So we went back and we reviewed it and we took it to the next stage. And I always said that Nolan Park wasn't something that was fixed in stone, that there was always the possibility that we would move. And now we have moved, and now we would accept, and we would review it on an annual basis, but now we would accept Wexford Park, O'Moore Park, Nolan Park and Tullamore could be possibly used for the Dubs, depending on the actual fixture itself. Like, I mean, if it's Dublin Meath, Dublin Kildare, every likelihood it'll always be in Croke Park. But no, I won't say, and I will not say I made a mistake, even though I'm not afraid to ever say I made a mistake, but I think we've made progress, and I did use the word caution. And, you know, I personally had no reason not to go to Port Leash. My father was a Leash man. I always went as a young lad supporting Leash with him. That's where I got my love for the GAA. So there was no personal agenda in Leash at all. I was just making a very calm, objective decision. The easiest decision to make was become a hero down in Leash with my father's family and friends and everything. But I didn't do that. I did what I thought at the time was the right decision. But it has moved on, and now we're prepared to get Dublin out. And I think it's brilliant to have Dublin out of Croke Park.
It is.
Because I live in the shadow of Croke Park, and, you know, we don't necessarily as a local club gain a whole lot out of having Dublin and Croke Park, whereas by bringing Dublin down to Port Leash or to Wexford, it's huge for the local business community, and it gives credibility then to the GAA to go and look for sponsorship within the community. I know last year when we went to Nolan Park, like, it was great for the GAA in Kilkenny to say, we brought this to the county, we brought this business.
Yeah, but John, just the GAA, sorry, because I was going to finish up on this, but just to say the GAA in Kilkenny, the GAA in Kilkenny is hurling, like, they don't care about football. Like, so to go to Nolan Park, to a county who shows complete disregard to football, it seemed like an incredibly bad decision.
Well, look, I'm not going to get into the. I always view the GAA as we promote both hurling and football. I'm not a man that says it's one or the other. Obviously, if you look at Kilkenny, football is stronger than. Or sorry, hurling is stronger than football. Like, if you look in Dublin, you could say, is Dublin a football county? Because you see so many brilliant underage hurlers coming through, and they're good at the football as well, and they opt to go for the football. So you'd say,
That's not fair on Dublin now. That's not fair on Dublin. That's players,
yeah, I know,
that's a player's
but
choice.
I'm just saying, they're both promoting hurling, they're both and football, but in Kilkenny, because of the population, there's a far greater attraction to be involved with the senior or with the hurling concept than there is with the football. They do have football in Kilkenny, but it's not as strong as hurling, and that's just the reality. It's not as strong. And I know they have a passion for hurling, but look, they do the hurling and they do it well there, and I'm not going to hold that against them, you know?
Yeah, okay, right, John. Well, we're running out of time anyways. Thanks very much for taking the call.
No problem.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just been in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me. You're looking
well,
at me.
Out of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a pointing coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
All right, moving on to the interprovincial competitions now, and we have Johnny Doyle, Leinster selector, obviously ex-Kildare player, on the line. Johnny, how did you get roped into that?
Well, I suppose, Colm, I got a phone call from Sean Kelly last year, actually, to see would I get involved in the selectors. Well, I was a bit disappointed. I thought maybe he felt that I'd a half an hour in the legs, but obviously he didn't. So I was they asked me to get involved, and look, I suppose I played the game. I played it for a few years, and I always enjoyed it as a player, and I said, you know what, it's not a huge commitment, and I get involved with him, and I didn't take part. And we were on the way up to, I think it was to Newry last year, and with the rain, and that, it didn't go ahead after. It didn't get on. So that's how I ended up getting involved.
And how was the experience altogether? Like, did you train before it? How was the experience on the day of the game? You know, the whole thing.
Yeah, well, look, I suppose I'd be the type of person come that would go and maybe try to pick up some little thing or learn something, and, you know, to see could I you know, bring it back either to the club or, and that was a lot of reason I always tried to go with an open mind these things. We met twice, the two Wednesdays beforehand, and I suppose the difficulty was the fact that players had committed, and maybe a club match. I know Brian Fenton had a club match that he wasn't sure when it was going to be played. I think they were playing Michael Fitzsimons' team in a league playoff or a relegation. So while he would have loved to get involved and had committed, you know, obviously his club, a game like that was very important, so he couldn't commit, and you had a couple of lads that were away and stuff like that. But all were reasonably positive. Anyone that I had spoke to, you know, when we came up with a list, were positive about it and wanted to play, and took it as, you know, we would have, I don't necessarily remember too much about, but we would have heard about the, you know, 40,000 or 50,000 going to look at a Raver Cup final. So there is that thing of, you know, representing your province, you know, which is a, players would have felt that it was a nice honour. But it ended up, I suppose, that's true. You're playing in front of a very, very small crowd, to be bigger crowds at league games in Kildare, you know, which was disappointing, and I suppose it hasn't captured the imagination of the people. And the funny thing about it is, you know, we didn't have, you know, if you were to pick a best, we were to sit down and pick the best 15 Leinster footballers at the moment, were they all on the field? No, they weren't, and for whatever reason. And maybe that's some of the lack of attraction from the paying public. But
yeah, it definitely is, John. Because Johnny, because you know, like I mean, John Heslin is realistically the only Leinster player that you could make an argument that would make the first 15 in Leinster. You know, like I would look at that Leinster team that went out at the weekend as maybe a Leinster C team or a D team. You know, and like everybody can't have genuine excuses, because I hear this all the time saying, "Oh, the players are behind it." The evidence of not just the Leinster team, the evidence of every team, maybe barring the Munster hurling team, is that the top players see this as an inconvenience and don't actually want to commit to it.
Well, look at it, there is that, and look at it, you have to go on the evidence that you see. Like, I mean, and I'd have to take that point. You know, it's hard to argue with that. Like, if I'm saying once that, you know, the players wanted to play it, and but at the end of the day, they didn't. Regardless of what other commitments they had, it was a bigger commitment to play with Leinster, which probably tells its own story.
Yeah.
You know, like they wouldn't miss that for their county. If it was a county game, they made it. So, you know, you have to look at it down there. But look, the evidence is there. And as I said, I played in it, and I was some of the greatest, and got to meet some great people, you know, and we talk about trips we had away and stuff like that. But the evidence is there at the moment. It's dying. For me personally, I think it's unfortunate. I don't have a solution. They'll say it's the wrong time of the year, but if you put it in March or April, it's still the wrong time of the year for someone else. So,
yeah.
Again, it's dying, whether we like it or not, and that's the fact of the matter. I think it's a pity, but a calendar column, and it's no different. We look at it, an inter-county calendar or a calendar for clubs, is bursting at the seams. You know, like even tournament games are a thing of the past now. You know, there's so much on the calendar. It's just I don't see anywhere it can fit in, and you know, the easy thing to blame the GAA, and in ways I would say, you know, they could do a lot more to promote it, and you know, you'll have the Aussie rules versus the compromise or the interprovincials. You know, should we be shop window for these guys to come and look at our players? And you know, I'm not sure what is the best way, but the evidence that I've seen, a bit like yourself, it is dying, and I don't know whether there's any life, there's any point going with the defibrillator. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's the thing. It must be frustrating from your point of view coming in as a selector and trying to get lads to commit and then ending up with the team that you did. That's my issue with the GAA on this, is that they say they want to keep it, but there doesn't seem to be any real effort. Like, I mean, it was launched last Wednesday.
Yeah, and there's no joined up thinking.
No.
You know, there's not, like, you would imagine that, okay, if we really want to promote this and really want to, you know, we have to make sure that there's no club fixtures or there's no inter-county challenge matches for the same weekend, which, you know, things like that are, so, you know, you've won a string of the organisation, you know, organising a club relegation match, which is vital. I mean, if I was a player and Alan Wood were in a relegation playoff, I'd have to tell Sean Kelly, sorry Sean, I really would love to, I'm terribly disappointed, but I have to go and play at my club. You know, that's the fact of the matter. So, you know, there doesn't seem to be that joined up thinking. I said, look, to say at the start of the year, like we didn't know, like obviously Ulster couldn't play and it was to be on the Sunday, but if we'd won Saturday night coming off the field, we didn't know when it was. We were talking, will it be in the new year, and sure, club managers on. So, you know, if you had this year now that we know exactly the weekend that it's taking place,
yeah,
and players can plan for it, managers can plan for it, and there's a bit of joined up thing to say, well, you know what, we know that the Leinster are playing that weekend, and Clare County Board are not going to have, that's going to be a clear, we're keeping that Saturday clear for the board play that.
Yeah,
that weekend. You know,
I think
there's no joined up thinking.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be, and I think now that there's plans for the club to finish in a calendar year, there's the St. Patrick's Day day that would be there for the option of playing the interprovincials and market it and make it a bit of a big deal, and maybe let the proceeds of it go to charity. So I think John Milan suggested that, and that's a good idea.
Yeah, it is a good idea, because people feel, and even if it was this time of the year, and obviously it's not ideal for playing football, but you know, coming up to Christmas, and if it was a charity like the Vince DePaul or the Homeless or something like that, you know, it does think, well, look, I've contributed and I've got a good deal. And because the football is actually good, there's no blanket defences, there's no, you know.
Well, surely Ulster are playing the blanket defence.
Well, now I can't comment on that. But, you know, so you just, I suppose the two teams go out and made the best team win, and you know, it's high scoring games. All right, this time of the year, the standard wouldn't be, we'll say it is in an All Ireland final or anything like that, but it was still attractive enough football. You've got plenty of scores, and most of the people, the few people that I spoke to afterwards said, God, I really enjoyed that, you know, but obviously not enough of them, and that is the problem. And look, at there's no point beating around the bush. The star names attract the crowd.
Hey, Johnny.
That's the way it is, and we didn't have them.
It's Mikey here. I was just wondering, with the crowd that there was, and you know, you said the lads enjoyed the game. Did anyone afterwards comment on the crowd in the dressing room? Is that something the players noticed? Because, you know, you're talking about inter-county stars who are used to playing in front of thousands and even hundreds for their club. To be going out in front of, you know, two men and a dog must be, they must notice it, I guess, is what I'm wondering.
I'm sure it did. It's not something that look at your conversation in the dressing room afterwards. You know, when you're beaten, it's just about, you know, thanking lads for making a commitment and stuff like that. And it wasn't, I suppose, you know, if it was a final or something, they might have went for a few drinks, and that's when the conversation goes, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was. We went back for a bit of grub and things like that, but the conversation wasn't really, it didn't go that direction. But I still feel that the people that and you know, obviously we talk about the Stars game, but you can imagine someone that doesn't play in them high crowds or big crowds, and that doesn't, and like, to be not those people that came away with a Leinster jersey that they'll say in 20 years time to their grandkids or 30 years time and say, look, I played for Leinster. It doesn't matter whether there was one man and his dog or 80,000, he played for Leinster, and that's, he went away, and for that maybe there's nothing keeping it alive.
Yeah, well, he played for a watered down Leinster team, he'd be telling them, and you know, well, if the grandchildren did a bit of research, he'd be pulled up pretty quickly. But
Google.
Oh, you played on that awful Leinster team, Grandad. come here. I want to pull you up on this, because here's two players, Shane O'Rourke and Tommy Walsh, two like of the best full forwards you're going to see. Two brilliant players, both played for both Munster and Leinster respectively. They haven't played with their counties all year. As a Kildare man, how did you okay Shane O'Rourke coming onto that field for Leinster?
I'm going to do it now. I blame Sean Kelly straight away and Jason Sherlock.
Didn't consult with the selectors.
Didn't consult. That's the easy way over. No, to be honest with you, you know, we had, it was difficult to try get everybody involved, and you're looking at different players for different positions. And I suppose Kildare had a fight night, so that ruled out a lot of them guys. Straight away, there was, and look at, I'm sure there's someone out there will say, if I got a phone call, I would have went, you know, and you run into that. Shane's name came up. My opinion was, well, maybe, you know, I know he's had the serious trouble with injuries, but it, you know, he could go on to have a good deal, get back involved with the, maybe something like this might give him a jolt, and that was my opinion on it, and he was very willing to come, and he didn't start, but he came on and got a bit of time, and he did very well, and he, you know, so look, I'm sure there is people thinking that's a ridiculous call, but that was the thinking from my point of view anyway when his name came up.
Yeah, okay. And yeah, just finally,
you Johnny, might be happy with that answer now, Colin.
No, look, I'm happy with, look, any time you see Shane O'Rourke back on the field is great. It's just, I think, like, seeing two fellas that weren't involved with the county, it kind of cheapens it a little bit, you know, when you're looking from the outside.
Yeah, and I can understand that too, and I, like, you know, I would have the opinion of, you know, there was maybe players that had been there and you know, maybe headed off for during the year or didn't finish the year, or, you know, I would think, well, we should try to get the best player or the main men from each team, but unfortunately that didn't work out that way, you know, but that's maybe part of the problem too.
Yeah, okay, right, well, sure, we'll leave it there. Johnny, thanks very much for taking the call.
No bother, Colm, anytime.
Yeah, lads, it's very hard to know really what to do with these bloody things. Like, my opinion of them is they have to go at this stage.
I don't know what you're talking about. That's, if that hasn't whet your appetite for Thursday night and Saturday afternoon, I don't know what will.
Yeah, because this usually we have a last slot. There's no last slot this week because we've no action at all, except for the Interprovincials, which are played, the hurling final is tomorrow night in Thurles at 7:45. Just, you know, the glamour of it.
Well, we could talk about Ulster scoring 3-7. 17 at the weekend, and yeah. Peter Hart scoring 1-8. Let's talk about that.
Well, that was a classic. There's no blanket defences. Come on now, Johnny. We know Ulster have the blanket defence. Yeah, the football final is Connacht and Ulster, and that's in Carrick and Shannon at 2 o'clock. Carrick and Shannon at this time of the year, boggy field. Not expecting champagne football down there. Ulster with their blanket. He'll fancy
3-17
Ulster.
He scored against Munster. 3-17.
And your second favourite player in the whole world, Peter Hart.
I know, he's the best player in Ireland. well, what, like, it's funny, Johnny saying there that it's dying. It's dead at this stage. I didn't even know it was on until, like you said, we were talking about it on the show. I was like, oh shit, I better
Kildare research. Kildare footballers would rather go punch each other in the face than play for Leinster in the provincials. Now that says it all, really, doesn't it?
I was going to pick him up on that one, actually, the fight night. Maybe they were too injured, or they were, you know, it's a bit of prep.
But why not have like a one day, a sevens tournament? You'd have four teams, just pick the best 10 from each province, or the best 10 to go in the sevens team, and just play it off. It's 9 games when you have the group stages, the semi-finals and the finals. Have it all at Croke Park. I'd go and watch that.
Yeah, see, there's the sevens before the All-Ireland, like Kilmacook-Croke kind of have that, you know. It's not, I genuinely think that if they're played on St. Patrick's Day, they were marketed well. St. Patrick's Day is a free weekend. Get all the top players. Like we said last week, there's a natural rivalry between the provinces from the rugby. Play on that rivalry. Play on it. Market it. People will go to watch it, and especially tourists, because they're exhibition games at the end of the day. Any tourists, oh, this is Munster Leinster, and you know, it's a province which tourists understand an awful lot better than, you know, a few Leash players are coming up. You know, it's Leinster versus Munster, and play it in St. Patrick's Day and market it. And that's the final, that is the final, like, throw of the dice, because they've sent lads away to Boston on holiday. They've sent, you know, they've done everything to try and keep this going. Don't keep it going. And I'm sure every Leinster player, every Ulster player, every Munster player, they'll all say that was a huge honour. You're bloody right, it was a huge honour. You're a lot of you are struggling to get on your own county teams. Like, of course it's a huge honour. Like, don't use that kind of, you, let's take a list of the Leinster players that refuse to go, and let's publish that list and say, this is what the interprovincials mean to these lads. They can't all have genuine reasons.
It's a very big list. Our servers could struggle. It's pretty much every footballer.
Well, I'd like the cross references with who should have been asked as well, rather than who refused to go. I mean, you'd have 15 people refusing to go who probably, in an ideal world, wouldn't be asked to go. Yeah. You had all the Dubliners there.
Well, that's it. So the top tier don't want to go, the second tier don't want to go. And I don't, there's no disrespect to the Leinster team. Like, I mean, there's John O'Loughlin, I mentioned John Heslin. These lads are top players in their positions. But at the same time, that Leinster team is very, very far down the list of top, you know, players in that in those positions. And you know, that is something that the GAA just need to look and say, this is broken. Either we're going to fix it or stop playing lip service to it.
I think it's time to just let it go. Leave the provincial rivalry to the rugby and to the Tyne and to Queen Maeve and everything else. We don't need it. I've no problem with you, Ulster folk, Conan. I don't feel need to settle this on the field
once
a year. It's just, it's nonsense. Great. People used to go to it. People used to go to the Coliseum to watch Lions devour Christians as well. It doesn't mean you have to keep it going. I'm not comparing the interprovincials to the devouring of Christians by
Ulster
Lions.
Ulster is not that bad.
There was a lot more passion back then. Listen, we're back next week. That's all we have time for this week. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back next week. It's the 21st. We'll get a show together for you, and then we'll let you know what we're going to do over the Christmas period. All right. Thanks, lads. And we'll see you next week. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.